The Guardian.
Hi, my name's Nick Watt. I'm now joined by Pat Doherty, the Vice President of Sinn Féin, who represents West Tyrone in the Northern Ireland Assembly and at Westminster. Pat has been a key figure in the Republican movement for getting on now for 30 years. First of all, Pat, I should wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day and obviously not draw attention to the fact that you are in London and not in your rather more beautiful home county of Donegal. Pat, The Guardian this week is serialising the memoirs of Jonathan Powell, Tony Blair's former chief of staff, who was dubbed the longest-serving Northern Ireland secretary for the way in which he shepherded the peace process over a decade. Can I ask you to assess his contribution?
Oh, well, I think it was absolutely crucial. Obviously, Tony Blair was the prime minister, but Jonathan Powell was very much his right-hand man, was at many of the key meetings and took part in lots of the, you know, the meetings, the pre-meetings, the meetings that would be planning or leading up to maybe a crunch meeting. Yeah, so he was obviously a very key person in the whole British establishment, and particularly with Tony Blair.
And he writes that in addition, obviously, to him being at all the sort of the public meetings, Good Friday Agreement and all that sort of stuff, that he actually had secret meetings at delicate points in the negotiations in the peace process with members of Sinn Féin, Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness. Were you ever at any of those meetings?
No, I wasn't, but I would be aware of that, and that would be factually correct, yeah.
And I know that one thing that Sinn Féin has always felt very strongly about, and obviously particularly felt strongly about during this peace process, was that governments had neglected the North, had not been interested. Did you notice a change in 97, and was Jonathan Powell's intense involvement, the chief of staff to the British Prime Minister, was that a sign that this was a new British government taking a new approach?
Well, it was a sea change. There's no doubt that the British government, from my perspective, illegally claimed sovereignty over the six counties. From their perspective, they utterly neglected their remit. You could argue politically that it was their neglect that created the demand for civil rights in the first place. The refusal to deal with all of those demands laid the groundwork for armed conflict. So the British government have a huge, huge responsibility and a lot of things to answer for. But there was a sea change in terms of their attitude, in terms of their willingness to dialogue and their willingness to, if you like, get down to the core issues and to start to deal with it. I remember one time at a British Labour Party conference, John Reid said to me, look, forget about 800 years of history, it's about this last number of years from 97 on. That's what counts. We are going to resolve all of these issues. And then I asked him about collusion and he wasn't so forthcoming. But anyway, he was making the point, which I agree with, that there was a sea change in Tony Blair and his regime. When it came out, and I was at that first meeting when he came over to Belfast.
Because a key part of that sea change, obviously, was not just engaging in Ireland, but also engaging with Sinn Féin, if you like, bringing Sinn Féin in from the cold. And there was that meeting that took place in Stormont, as you just referred to, October 97, just 5 months after Tony Blair had won that election. Jonathan Powell writes about that in The Guardian today, saying quite a nervous meeting because it was sort of getting to know you session. Can you tell us what the atmosphere was like?
Well, I mean, I think Sinn Féin brought itself in from the cold. It was, we were there on the basis of our electoral mandate, and which we had won in the assembly elections, and we had proven it in the election that John Major had called back in 96, where they were arguing that we didn't represent anybody. Anybody with any sense knew that that wasn't the case. But yeah, I do remember that that first meeting. I actually made a sketch of the seating arrangements when I got home, and I'm not particularly into keeping diaries, but in some set piece situations, I write a few notes, and I made a sketch of, and just the way it happened, I happened to be sitting directly opposite Tony Blair, and it was interesting. Gerry was very straightforward with him. He said to him that he wanted him to be the last British Prime Minister to have occupation of our country. Tony Blair said that he understood us and that he had read all about us, which was a bit of a laugh on our side. I'm sure that he had to. And no, it was the start. And I mean, it was an indication that things were going to move or potentially going to move in a better direction.
And can I ask you that Jonathan Powell writes in the book today that Tony Blair sought repeatedly to meet the leadership of the IRA, the IRA Army Council, that he put this through Gerry Adams, who initially said no, and then there was an agreement from Gerry Adams and indeed the IRA that this meeting would take place, and then it didn't take place. Now, I know as Vice President of Sinn Féin, you can't talk for the IRA, but obviously as a Republican, you can recognise that that would have been quite a big step for a British Prime Minister to meet the leadership of the IRA.
Yeah, well, it would have been, but I think now, just given where we're at now, it was unnecessary and it didn't happen because there was really no need for it to happen. Sinn Féin were there negotiating, you know, on their own mandate and from a Republican perspective. But in terms of the factuality of it, yes, Tony Blair did at one and probably more than one occasion say that he was prepared to meet with the IRA.
But, I mean, that's a pretty extraordinary thing to take place, if it had taken place, isn't it? A British Prime Minister meeting an organisation which Britain regards as proscribed.
I suppose, depending on your perspective and where you're coming from, but if you're engaged in a peace process, it's a different dynamic than what you might call the ordinary dynamic of what might happen in the Dáil in Dublin or the Assembly in terms of debate or in Westminster of cut and thrust. When you're in a peace process, you're trying to understand where your enemy's coming from, try to understand where we can reach a common agreement, how can we move the situation forward. I mean, often in that period, the word intent would be used quite a lot in terms of is it the intention of your enemy to move the situation forward? And if you've come to that assessment, then how can you assist? How can you find common ground? That's the difference between that and the cut and thrust of what you might call normal politics.
And I know that you obviously can't speak for the IRA because you're Vice President of Sinn Féin, but from your understanding of the Republican movement, what do you think was in their mindset that they were thinking it would be fruitful and okay for them to meet a British Prime Minister?
For
the IRA?
Well, I don't know that the IRA said that they were. I don't even know that they said they wouldn't. It didn't come to anything, you know, so I suppose it never came to that point. Because I think that there was enough dynamics in the meetings or in the room when Sinn Féin met with the British to deal with any of the issues that require to be dealt with.
Now, we all sort of think that that Northern Ireland is sorted, that we had devolution last May. We have Martin McGuinness, your chief negotiator, deputy first minister, in a power-sharing executive with Ian Paisley, soon to be replaced probably by Peter Robinson. But there we are. We have a power-sharing executive in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. But that's stage one. We actually need stage two, which is the devolution of policing and criminal justice, meant to happen in May this year. But the DUP are now calling for a delay. Can you tell us how serious that's going to be for you if that is delayed?
Well, this is a real big issue. If you remember the whole debate around policing and justice, if you bring it down to its core value, which would be democratic accountability, and we cannot have a democratic accountability until we have policing and justice powers transferred and a ministry created, and then we will have all of that democratic accountability. So it is crucial that it happens. It was very much part of the dialogue we had with the British, and probably this is every bit as important, the dialogue we had with our own base on how we were moving things forward. It was part of St Andrews. The DUP know that. There are difficulties within the DUP. And they need a bit of time to sort that out, which clearly they do, and you've just referred to the Ian Paisley standing down in May. But it's absolutely crucial that this happens and that happens within the timescale that we agreed. If the DUP are pushed for a bit of time, then let them talk to us about that. But that this issue is resolved is crucial, and resolved in the terms of policing and justice powers being devolved.
Are you indicating there, because you're obviously understanding that the difficulties that the DUP has, are you indicating that Sinn Féin could be flexible over the timing, though you must have a cast-iron guarantee that it's going to happen?
Well, I do believe that the DUP wanted to happen, or at least the leading elements of the DUP wanted to happen. And it's been said at home, you know, that Sinn Féin and the DUP are not able to tackle the crunch issues. And then last week we crunched on the terms of the super councils or the model. And we came to an agreement. So we are able to dialogue. We are able to come to an agreement. And it's not beyond our wit or their wit to resolve this, but that it has to be resolved. It has been said to me, you know, by politicians here in London from various parties that devolution timescale was moved forward from March to May. But the big difference there was it was only moved forward there when the DUP and Sinn Féin both agreed that it would be moved forward. And I'm looking to the DUP, you know, to get round the table with us now and resolve this issue of policing and justice, because it is crucial. There is no logic in them saying there is no confidence in the community for the devolving of policing and justice, and then running a big economic conference in the beginning of May, expressing the great confidence in the community for outside business to come in. There's a contradiction in terms there. I think they know that. And I think they're seeking just a bit of time in the changeover of leadership to deal with some of their more, if you like, contrary elements of their base.
Now, the DUP are saying that they will find it difficult to agree to the devolution of policing and criminal justice until the IRA Army Council is wound up. Yeah. Again, I know that obviously you can't speak for the IRA because you're Vice President of Sinn Féin, but from your understanding of the Republican movement, do you think that is a realistic and achievable demand?
Well, I mean, I think all issues at the end of the day will be resolved. All issues will be resolved. But they can only be resolved when there's a meaningful dialogue with a real intent and a real purpose and a real dynamic as to what the outcome would be. So that's essentially a question for the IRA. But I have no doubt that given all of the issues that we have resolved from the very beginning, all of the issues that you might have thought were insurmountable, both on the British side and on the Unionist side and on the Republican side, that if we are serious about moving this whole process forward, and we are, and I do believe the DUP are, then we can deal with any issue.
So from your understanding of the Republican movement, the devolution of policing and criminal justice would be such a huge step, symbolically significant step, that the Republican movement would regard that as something that they would want to respond to?
Well, I mean, it is a huge step, and it is a necessary step. What the IRA would do would be up to them. But if you look at any of what were perceived as insurmountable issues some time back, all of them were resolved. So I have no doubt that issues can be resolved if there's dialogue and there's a clear intention as to where we intend to take the process.
For more discussion and analysis, download Guardian Daily. That's The Guardian's news podcast, available first thing in the morning, Monday to Friday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.